Hi, I'm Lizzie, and this is Once Upon a Coaster, the podcast dedicated to exploring classic and timeless older roller coasters. I was born and raised a coaster nut, come from a large family of engineers, and I have a degree in history, making me a unique candidate to talk about what makes these older rides so fantastic. Join me for new episodes bi-weekly where we'll explore some old classic roller coasters and talk about what makes them so special in today's ever-changing coaster world. Are you ready for this ride? Please keep hands and arms inside the car at all times and prepare for another episode of Once Upon a Coaster. Well, hello everyone, and welcome to Once Upon a Coaster, the podcast dedicated to old and defunct roller coasters that we all still secretly adore. I'm your host today, Lizzie, and I'm so excited for today's episode with you. This season, we decided to focus on a few roller coasters that I'd classify as newer classic rides. Meaning they're iconic by today's standards, but they're not the 75-year-old gems that we often cover on this podcast. Some of the rides we'll be looking at this season, including today's main coaster, were built in a post-2000 world. Our general rule of thumb here at Once Upon a Coaster is that any coaster we look at should generally be at least 20 years old for it to be considered for an episode. Nowadays, that puts us at any coaster built prior to 2005, which seems a little ridiculous to me. But as you'll see as this season unfolds, we have a few roller coasters in our upcoming episodes that were either built or rebuilt right around the 2000 mark. But I'm getting a bit ahead of myself here. I'm just really excited for today's episode, I guess. There's so much to talk about, and our friend Matt Day is back with us later in the episode to chat with us a bit. It's a really good day for a podcast, honestly. Now, before we get going too far into this episode, let's take a moment for an announcement or two to kick everything off. We don't shout this out as often as we used to, probably because we've grown in size and listening numbers over the years, but our podcast is on social media sites, and we would love for you to give us a follow or a like or a share on any of our pages. You can find Once Upon a Coaster on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Mastodon. Search Once Upon a Coaster and find us and give us a follow. We post a lot more stuff on our social media pages, so if you love seeing roller coaster content in your feeds on a more regular basis, make sure you seek out our pages. Sometimes we post what parks we're traveling to or what classic roller coasters we're riding. Sometimes we post historical items relating to the theme park world. Sometimes we post previews of upcoming episodes or seasons. Regardless of what platform you're on, we'd love to have you join our ranks of followers if you haven't already. Be sure to check out our page or pages today and give us a hello when you find us. Well, that's it for our announcement section. I guess it was a little shorter than I expected, but this is already going to be a monstrous episode today, so short and sweet is exactly how we like our announcement sections. It's time now for our trivia question, where we ask a roller coaster related question or two, and our winner gets a fun Once Upon a Coaster prize package. Since this is our first trivia question of season 6, and it's been a while since I asked any questions on this podcast, let's review the rules a little bit. Our trivia questions are generally pretty straightforward. I'll ask you a question about a roller coaster, and if you know the answer, then you can head over to our website, www.ouacpodcast.com. And click on the purple button at the top of the homepage that says Trivia Contest. Fill out your name and answer, and we'll contact you if you're the winner. In most cases, unless we otherwise specify, the winner of each question is the first person to answer the question correctly on our website. It's always a leg up if you're a regular listener to this podcast, but don't feel intimidated if you aren't. The one winner last season didn't answer until 4 months after the episode aired. Winners can come from anywhere in the world. We do, and have, shipped our prizes internationally, so if you're listening outside the United States, don't feel like you can't answer if you happen to know the question. Our prize packages are generally the same, with some great Once Upon a Coaster swag sent your way. You know, the usual, like keychains, stickers, the works. Depending on what else we have in stock at the time, we might throw in a surprise or two for you, but that really just depends on what's going on over here at headquarters. But yeah, those are the general rules for our contest. Head to our website, answer the question, and we'll be in touch if you are the winner. Before we get to our brand new question for this episode, Let's review one of last season's trivia questions to see what the answer was and who won a prize package. Last season, we asked two questions about our podcast in general to try to expand on what goes on behind the scenes here at Once Upon a Coaster. The first question we asked last season was, name one of the top three most listened to episodes on Once Upon a Coaster. This was a tricky one because we're up over 50 episodes at this point, so there was a lot to choose from. But Craig from Salt Lake City, Utah, guessed correctly when he answered Big Bad Wolf, an episode all the way back from season one of this podcast. As of this episode recording, Big Bad Wolf is our second most listened to episode on this podcast. In the third spot is Giant Dipper from season four, and our number one most listened to episode is Demon from season three. Demon is an odd one for me, not gonna lie. I mean, I love that little arrow coaster as much as the rest of you, apparently, but I never expected it to be the most listened to episode of this podcast. And it's quite a bit in the lead over Big Bad Wolf. This isn't some neck and neck race for the top spot or anything. Demon is solidly in first place here, and I'll see if anything manages to ever overtake it. Since Craig guessed Big Bad Wolf correctly, he received a prize package from our podcast team and a shout out on this episode. Congratulations on winning, and thanks for playing. Okay, now it's your turn. Let's see if you have the knowledge to answer this and win a prize of your own. As most roller coaster fans know, Aerodynamics was the leader in roller coaster design in the 1970s, 1980s, and 1990s. Year after year throughout that period, they continued to premiere bigger and faster roller coasters that broke records for being the fastest, or the tallest, or the biggest, or the most inversions on a roller coaster. Many years during that time period, they debuted multiple roller coasters throughout the world. However, in 1983, at arguably the height of their fame, Aerodynamics debuted only one roller coaster for the summer season. What was the only aero roller coaster to make its grand entrance into the roller coaster world in 1983? If you know the answer, head to www.ouacpodcast.com and let us know the name of the ride. And listen next season as we reveal the answer and the winner on an upcoming episode. Good luck to everyone, and we'll talk about this answer really soon. Well, we're just about ready to settle in with our friend Matt for a great big chat about a great big roller coaster. But before we do, let's pause for a quick ad break. When we return, we'll be heading to Cedar Point to talk about the iconic and legendary Stratacoaster that helped to shape the roller coaster industry in the early 2000s. Sit tight, we'll be right back. Sometimes it's so hard to wait for the things that we love. Vacations, visit with friends and families, and podcasts? Do you miss Once Upon a Coaster between seasons? Or even between episodes? Waiting for a new season of your favorite roller coaster podcast can be hard, but we've made the waiting a little easier by teaming up with Buy Me a Coffee to give our listeners the chance for roller coaster extras to enjoy between seasons or episodes or whenever you have the time. At buymeacoffee.com/OUACoaster, we're talking about roller coasters all the time and would love for you to join us. There's a lot of free stuff over there for you to view, but if you're interested in even more fun from our team, you can become a member and unlock all the fun that we're having. For as little as $1 a month, you can unlock exclusive content like our defunct amusement park series, a look at old and abandoned amusement parks around the world, as well as our coffee break chats, where we discuss current roller coasters and amusement park news. Subscribers can also gain access to perks like early episode releases, free swag, social media shoutouts, and so much more. If you miss our podcast between seasons, or just want to support a small but growing podcast, be sure to head over to buymeacoffee.com/OUACoaster and join our support team. That's buymeacoffee.com/OUACoaster. Let's talk about coasters together. Hey friends, Once Upon a Coaster is currently hiring for a part-time writing position. If you have a love of roller coasters and theme parks and would like to help contribute to and grow our podcast with us, this might be the perfect position for you. Once Upon a Coaster is looking for a talented individual to help us manage and grow our Buy Me a Coffee subscription site. Duties would include researching and writing 1 to 2 monthly articles, helping to grow our subscriber base, and general contributions to our show lineup. Payment is scaled based on prior experience, and there are built-in bonuses and raises within the position for meeting our goals. This is a set-your-own-schedule position with approximately 4 to 8 hours of work monthly. Interested in learning more? Send us an email at hello@ouacpodcast.com for a job description including detailed job responsibilities, requirements for the position, and our pay scale. Once Upon a Coaster believes in honest pay for honest work, and our rates match or exceed the industry standards. This position is only available to U.S. citizens. Right, we're back, and this time I am joined by my sometimes co-host, Matt Day. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you for having me.
Last season, Matt joined us to talk about the old wooden gem that is Wild One at Six Flags America, but today we're sitting down to chat about an iconic Cedar Point roller coaster, Top Thrill Dragster to be specific, which is our main coaster on today's episode. There is a lot to unpack on this ride in today's episode, and I don't need this to stretch into like a 90-minute runtime here. So I want to dive right into taking a look at this ride. But before we get too in the weeds here, I just kind of wanted to start out with some general, you know, questions. So Matt, in general, what's your overall opinion of the original Top Thrill Dragster ride? Did you like it? Did you hate it? Did you think it was a bit overrated? How do you feel about it?
I liked it a lot. It was, I don't want to say it was like the roller coaster that got me into roller coasters, but it's definitely one of those early ones that I saw that I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I want to be a part of this and understand this and do these things. I can view it from a lens of it was very problematic, which we'll get into, but I did really enjoy it. It was, when I first rode it, obviously the most like intense roller coaster I've ever been on. And it always is a little bit nostalgic to me just because it was early on in my coaster days, and I really enjoyed my first time there, and it was kind of that quintessential, this is the most amazing ride in the world kind of thing back in the early mid-2000s. But I do think it needed a little updating, which hopefully we're going to be seeing here in 2024.
Yeah, we are recording this episode in early 2024, so the new coaster, which I guess, spoiler alert, for those of you who are out of the coaster loop, the new coaster has not yet opened, so we are recording this kind of in conjunction with the new coaster opening. So if you're listening to this at a later date, then a lot of this or some of this might be a little outdated, but for now, this is as current as we can get in terms of like our views and our information on the new ride. But I would agree with you in a lot of it. It was really fun, I think, for the first few years in terms of what it brought to the coaster world. I don't think it aged as well as some people would argue it has aged, but it's a good ride. I can appreciate it for what it is. I don't know if I was that sad when they announced that it would be closing permanently.
I think it was very much a one-trick pony. Well, I know it was very much a one-trick pony, but it was a really damn good trick that it had, so...
All right, well, let's get into some stats on the original Top Thrill Dragster, just so we can kind of all know a little bit about the backstory to this. So Top Thrill Dragster is an Intamin-designed hydraulic launch stratacoaster that opened at Cedar Point in 2003. The coaster was the first stratacoaster ever built, and the term stratacoaster was coined by Cedar Fair to label the coaster as reaching a top height above 400 feet or 122 meters. If you remember from our episode on Magnum XL 200, Cedar Point also coined the word hypercoaster to describe a roller coaster that reached a top height above 200 feet. And spoiler alert, although we haven't talked about one yet on this podcast, they also coined the phrase gigacoaster in 2000 when Millennium Force opened as the first coaster to reach top height above 300 feet. It's kind of amusing to me that these roller coaster terms Cedar Fair invented have become common terminology that we use to describe coasters today. You know that somewhere a Cedar Point creative team has cemented themselves into roller coaster history without maybe even originally meaning to, but that's what they've done. But I digress a little bit. While Top Thrill Dragster was the first Stratacoaster ever built, it was the second hydraulic launch coaster that Intamin had built, the first one being Accelerator at Knott's Berry Farm, which opened a year earlier in June of 2002.
I do want to note real quick that Top Thrill Dragster was not the first roller coaster that was built over 400 feet. It was just the first full circuit coaster and the first one that actually reached the 400-foot height mark. At Magic Mountain, there was actually a roller coaster. There still is actually a roller coaster, Superman Escape from Krypton, which is about 400 feet tall, but the car does not actually reach that height. It usually doesn't even come near that height. And it is not a full circuit coaster. It is just a launch, up a spike, and back down in reverse. So technically, Top Thrill Dragster was second, but it was the first official full circuit Stratacoaster, the first one to go over 400 feet.
It's the first one where the train actually hits the 400 mark.
Yes.
Right. Well, as Matt said, it was technically the first Stratacoaster to ever hit that 400 mark with the train, but it was the second hydraulic launch coaster that Intamin had built, the first one being Accelerator at Knott's Berry Farm, which opened a year earlier in June of 2002. Now, Accelerator, next to Top Thrill Dragster, kind of almost looks like a kiddie coaster. Though they have very similar track layouts, Accelerator only reaches a top height of 205 feet or 62 meters, not even really half the height of what Top Thrill Dragster gives us. Which, honestly, I have no complaints about Accelerator. It was a prototype coaster for Intamin, and Knott's had a need and the space to fit it in. Accelerator could walk so that Top Thrill Dragster could race, I guess. Top Thrill Dragster has a top height of 420 feet or 128 meters. The largest drop on the coaster was 400 feet or 122 meters. The top speed on the coaster hit 120 miles per hour or 193 kilometers per hour. The entire ride time was brief, about 20 seconds, making it one of, if not the shortest coaster rides out there. The cost of this ride in 2003 was $25 million, making it one of the most expensive roller coasters to have ever been constructed. Adjusted for inflation today, that is $42 million for a 20-second ride. Broken down, it costs more than $2 million for every second of ride time that you ride on that ride. For the record, the $25 million price tag tied Top Thrill Dragster with Millennium Force for the largest investment that Cedar Point has ever made on a ride at the park, as of the date that we're recording this in early 2024. Construction costs for the ride helped to add to the overall total of the build's budget, as two 480-foot tall cranes, or 150 meter tall, had to be shipped in to complete the construction of the upper third of the tower. This might not sound like a big deal. I mean, all roller coasters use cranes in their construction, until I'd let you know that when the ride was being built, only four cranes existed in all of North America that were 480 feet tall and had the load capacity to handle hauling the steel track to their final spot. And we all know that none of these four cranes were located anywhere near Cedar Point prior to the construction of this ride. So the construction costs for Top Thrill Dragster ballooned into quite the bill when they had to pay for 50% of the tallest cranes in North America to come and help them assemble this ride.
And I do want to say something about the construction here. I don't know if you were part of like the coaster crowd or anything back at this time, but I remember very clearly that the construction for this ride was wild. They cleared a large plot of land by Magnum. They removed an attraction, an old Dodgems ride that they shipped off to Mission Kids Adventure. And they started building this in 2002, basically. They were building it all through the fall. They actually reached basically the top height of the ride before they even announced it. They reached it in 2002, and they didn't announce Top Thrill Dragster and what it was until January of 2003. So they were working on this for a really long time, wouldn't say a thing about it, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, we actually are going to have a new ride. Surprise, I'm sure none of you saw this for the last 8 months.
I like that they thought they could hide this on a lake shoreline.
Yeah.
400 feet in the air. I will say, like I said earlier in the episode, this is one of the newer coasters that we've ever covered on this podcast. And it's amazing the difference that like the coaster community had for this ride instead of a ride built, you know, in the 1970s when the internet wasn't around. The amount of construction photos that are out there, the amount of weird rumors and gossips from like the coaster boards in 2002, it's incredible. And it shows how much like the coaster community really exploded with the invention of the internet.
My favorite little fun fact about this ride, probably not favorite, just a really funny fun fact. I don't know if you've ever seen this construction photo, but there is a construction photo of the ride half built. I want to see if I can pull it up to show you. The ride is half built, and they're showing some of the buildings with the top hat in the background. There is a construction worker standing there, very much looking like he is urinating on the side of one of the buildings. And it is just one of those pictures that is seared into my memory, and it is so hilarious.
You also know it would have never made the light of day like 20 years earlier, but...
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to the internet, we have these around forever. The ride held 20 people per car train, and on an optimum operating day, the park could see about 1,000 guests through the ride in an hour. And that's not a great number, to be honest, for what we would consider to be a premier roller coaster at the park. I always use the Jungle Cruise at Magic Kingdom to compare, because that line tends to back up on really busy days, and shows just how much more popular theme parks are today than when the Jungle Cruise was first dreamt up in the 1950s. But the Jungle Cruise on a peak operating day can see 1,500 guests per hour, which is 50% more than what Top Thrill Dragster could see. Later on in this episode, we're going to cover some more of the problems that Top Thrill Dragster faced during its lifetime, but keep this number in the back of your mind as we continue with this episode, because it's going to come up again. Now, prior to the ride opening, Cedar Point really hyped this ride up to potential guests. Upon opening day, Cedar Point promised that the ride would break all sorts of roller coaster records, and it did, including the world's tallest complete circuit roller coaster, a record which would stand only until King Ka opened at Six Flags Great Adventure in 2005. The world's tallest roller coaster, again, broken by King Ka. World's tallest roller coaster drop, a record broken by, wouldn't you guess it, King Ka. And the world's fastest roller coaster. Again, King Ka coming in here to just ruin this ride. But when the ride finally premiered in 2003, the overall reception of the ride was, I would say, mixed. Now, don't get me wrong. Fans, for the most part, loved Top Thrill Dragster. They loved the adrenaline rush associated with the launch. Going from 0 to 125 miles per hour in 4 seconds is an experience that most of us don't get to regularly experience, if ever. For all the complaints that people might have had over the years about Top Thrill Dragster, very few complained that there was a lack of excitement around the ride launch system. It's obviously one of the best features of the ride, and as Matt said, maybe the only feature of the ride. But the ride was plagued with a lot of issues upon opening. Some issues seemed to come from this being an Intamin prototype, accelerator notwithstanding here as the original prototype. And, you know, prototypes sometimes need some bugs worked out. Some issues seem to come from a lack of better planning or vision for the ride. For starters, shortly after opening, a faulty valve on the coaster's hydraulic system caused a short-term closure to allow the park time to replace the part. The staff also dealt with constant issues from not only the hydraulic system, but also the launch cable, either or both of which frequently led to the ride being down for guests. On top of that, as we stated a few minutes ago, the ride's through capacity was low, making it difficult for the park to manage guests' expectations at times. Waiting in line in the hot sun for, you know, 2 to 3 hours, only to experience a 20-second ride, left many guests wondering if the ride was kind of even worth it. And finally, in the early years of Top Thrill Dragster's existence, Cedar Fair had to deal with the dreaded rollback, a roller coaster term that we are all familiar with today, but was a brand new phenomenon to 2003 coaster fans. Occasionally, as you know, a train will launch without sufficient speed to reach the top of the tower on Top Thrill Dragster, and it would roll back onto the launch track, which is what coined the term rollback. This typically tended to happen more in cool, wet, or breezy conditions, or when the wind was working against the ride's trains. Intamin and Cedar Point had designed the ride to handle such situations, equipping the track with retractable magnet braking fins, which were raised after each launch, so that it could slow the train down in case it did not reach the top of the tower. Most likely, if you are a coaster fan today, you have either seen or personally experienced a rollback on a ride, especially as launch coasters have grown in popularity in the past 2 decades. But to early visitors of Cedar Point after Top Thrill Dragster opened, seeing a train fail to clear the top of the coaster tower led to some people fearing that there was a larger issue with the coaster and that it could potentially be unsafe to ride. I'm not saying that's true, I'm just saying that is what people were talking about.
And there have been a lot of instances throughout Top Thrill Dragster's life where guests have actually been injured. And there was one instance actually within the first few months of operating where 4 guests were actually struck by flying debris while they were riding the ride. And it kind of came out that the metal launch cable actually frayed as the train was being launched. And that had shards of metal actually shear off and strike the riders as the train launched. So while they were in that 0 to 120 mile per hour launch, they were being pelted by pieces of this frayed launch cable. So these riders were actually left with abrasions, mainly on their arms. One rider did have some cuts on his face. And while they were treated at the park's first aid station, 2 of them did later seek further medical attention on their own. So this is unfortunately just the first of multiple incidents throughout its operating lifetime where, while kind of freak accidents, things did happen where guests ended up either slightly or actually majorly injured from the ride.
And it ended up with guests kind of questioning the legitimacy of the ride and the safety of the ride. Within a few months of the first opening, Top Thrill Dragster, while popular, also began to develop this reputation of whether it was safe to ride. Between the short ride time that the ride gave guests and the constant downtime for repairs and fixes, as well as the small number of injuries that were developing from riding the ride, the kind of joke in those early days was to question whether anyone had actually ridden the ride safely. And I know we laugh about that now, but I can understand why people might have thought that. Rachel, who is our podcast head researcher here, had some family living near Cedar Point at the time of Top Thrill Dragster's premiere. And she let me know that the local news stations around Sandusky would literally run news segments about Top Thrill Dragster and would mock the ride for not operating a large majority of the time. The news broadcast would also suggest from time to time that Cedar Point should maybe consider revamping the ride or replacing it completely with something more reliable for guests to enjoy. Not to say that this was some grim foreshadowing here, but maybe the local news could see what Cedar Point couldn't at first, that the ride was problematic at times. And unfortunately, the ride would only continue to stay problematic as the years passed. Now, overall, I don't want to paint a completely grim picture here of Top Thrill Dragster for listeners. With time and some fine-tuning, the ride did become more reliable, staying open for much longer stretches of time without downtime for tweaks and repairs. And once riders began to understand that rollbacks were a common and completely safe aspect of a launch coaster of this magnitude, park guests understood that the ride was safe to embark on, even in less favorable weather conditions. But there were issues with the ride that time also was not going to be able to solve. One of the biggest issues here, again, was long wait times. This ride could back up for hours on busy days, even with all the additional coaster offerings that Cedar Point could offer to paying guests. And from the day it opened until the day it closed, some riders were always left underwhelmed with the ride and how little it did during its circuit. Engineering marvels aside here, the average guest and casual roller coaster fan often complained that it felt very much like a one-trick pony, as Matt said, allowing guests to experience an incredible launch system with heights soaring above 400 feet, but basically nothing else.
Now, I do want to actually celebrate what Top Thrill Dragster did right, though, because it was a spectacle for the guests who were in attendance, both those riding and those on the midway or just watching the coaster from anywhere else in the park, because never before had you seen a roller coaster go this fast and this high and be, honestly, this loud. This thing can be heard throughout the park, so everyone knew immediately when Top Thrill Dragster was back up and running because you could hear it no matter where you were on that peninsula.
Or you could see it.
Since it was
so big.
Yeah, it towered over everything. And they did a really smart thing. Cedar Point did a really smart thing with how they set up the launch. They set it up right next to the midway. And you actually, the queue was inside of it, which is a whole other issue that we'll touch on later. But they set up a grandstand set of bleachers next to the launch track. So when the train would roll out, it would roll into the forward launch position and be ready to launch. They would be playing sound effects, engines revving, just things to kind of hype you up and get you excited. And all the while, you had all of these people just watching you. They were spectators, they were sitting in the stands, and those stands were quite busy. All the people who didn't want to ride or were too scared to ride or couldn't ride would be sitting in those stands watching everyone launch. And in the seconds that you had to wait to count down to actually launch, it was a great atmosphere to have everyone just watching and cheering and celebrating. And when the launch hit, it just took your breath away every single time.
I would say in my history of riding roller coasters, I have never had such an adrenaline hype before a launch.
Yes.
As I did on the multiple times I've ridden Top Thrill Dragster over the years.
It's intimidating.
It's intimidating, and it's also just this absolute rush. Like, it, you can't replicate that anywhere. I mean, I've ridden other launch coasters, and you don't get that on other launch coasters the way you get that adrenaline spike on Top Thrill Dragster.
Yeah, the only two that really could compare would be King to Ka, but that has the caveat of its launches technically in the middle of nowhere in that park. There are no stands. There's no one really sitting there watching you from right next door. Or Dodonpa, or Dododonpa, which is now closed and will never launch again. So really, it's one of a very rare instances where that launch, that lead up to the launch, is just the most intimidating part of the ride.
Yeah, I would never classify Top Thrill Dragster as being a bad ride. And I want to get that point across, because I know we've been talking about the problems it encountered during its lifetime.
It was a problematic ride.
Yes, it was a problematic coaster, but a lot of guests still really enjoyed riding it despite its problems. When I talk about a coaster being a bad coaster, I'm talking about rides that are like so rough and so painful that people literally avoid them at all costs. Flashback at Six Flags Magic Mountain immediately comes to mind as a bad coaster that was poorly designed and literally no one wanted to ride it. That's my definition of a bad coaster. That's not what Top Thrill Dragster was, though. People still enjoyed riding it, but maybe they only enjoyed riding it under certain circumstances. I would never want to ride Top Thrill Dragster if it was raining just even slightly. Not that it ran a lot when it was raining, but if you ever, by unfortunate chance, got stuck on it when it was raining, it's not the most enjoyable ride launching that quickly in a light sprinkle.
I think worse than that would be riding it at nighttime in the summer, because since Cedar Point is on a lake, you know, there are a lot of bugs and other such creatures who call that area their home. And with how Top Thrill Dragster is designed and themed, they had spotlights on the launch track. So if you were lucky or unlucky enough to be there on a heavy bug night and you're sitting in, let's say, the first row, that launch would turn your face into a windshield and you would come back with a lot of squished bugs all over your face and body.
My very first time riding Top Thrill Dragster was in, I believe, 2004. I was in high school. It was a band trip because, of course, I was a band nerd. And so it was very new, and it was, you know, the darling ride that everyone had to ride. And the man next to me, as I got in the car for the very first time, like, and I'm pumped here, he just looked at me with the most serious face and he said, "Whatever you do, keep your mouth shut and don't scream. You could choke on a bug." And I don't know how realistic that is. I've never tested it. But to this day, when I get on launch coasters, this man, who I have no clue who he was or where he is in his life, like, his reminder comes up. It doesn't matter if it's a small launch coaster like Storm Runner at Hershey Park or a huge one like King to Ka. I keep my mouth shut every time, because that one time I was so worried about choking on a bug. Overall, though, I would say that Top Thrill Dragster is an average coaster. She is fine. She excites people. But I would argue that with the price tag Cedar Point paid for her, I'm sure they aren't happy that she kind of just hummed right along in the middle of the pack for their most popular roller coaster over the years. She's one of those rides that when you visit Cedar Point, you want to ride, but maybe you're not re-riding her. And maybe it doesn't ruin your day if she's closed or, you know, opens and closes because of the weather. Because they have so many more rides that you could ride that are probably a little more enjoyable. And again, for the $25 million price tag, that's probably not how Cedar Point really saw her status at the park becoming over the years, but that's exactly where it was.
I don't think Top Thrill Dragster put Cedar Point on the map, per se, but I think it really spotlighted Cedar Point and who they are and what they could be and eventually what they would become, especially today, as the quote-unquote roller coaster capital of the world. I know that title is tossed around with a bunch of parks, but a lot of people do give that title to Cedar Point. And Top Thrill Dragster really did get them a lot of publicity, good and bad, but isn't all publicity good publicity? So it really got, I mean, I'm sure anyone who liked roller coasters in the 2000s saw a TV show or an ad or multiple TV shows, anything like that, about Top Thrill Dragster. I mean, how many Travel Channel documentaries did they have where they probably featured that stupid ride one time or throughout the whole show? So it really did kind of cement itself in everybody's mind, from coaster enthusiasts to just general normal person going to Cedar Point. Everyone knew about this crazy tall, crazy fast, crazy intense ride that Cedar Point had opened. And even though King Ka opened 2 years later and really stole all of the records from Top Thrill Dragster, I would be willing to argue that Top Thrill Dragster is and has remained the more popular or the more front of mind version of these two coasters that are out there.
I will say, if it helps Cedar Point at all, I visited Great Adventure last year and surprise, surprise, King Ka was down that day. So it was not just a Top Thrill Dragster problem. It was an Intamin Stratacoaster problem. We waited all day for that ride to open and it never opened.
So. I will say you didn't miss a lot. In my opinion of riding both multiple times, King Ka is, and I'm sure I'll get a lot of hate for this, but King Ka is the worst ride by far because of, first, the location doesn't have that crowd interaction like Top Thrill Dragster does. But secondly, the ride experience itself is much more subpar than Top Thrill Dragster's is. Their trains are different. They actually have over-the-shoulder restraints. And because of how the trains are designed, they actually sit higher on the track than Top Thrill Dragster's trains do, which leads to a lot more shaking and side-to-side movement than Top Thrill Dragster's would, especially during the launch. Coupling that with the over-the-shoulder restraints, and it's a lot more uncomfortable of a ride. It also just has a very odd structure for the launch, where Top Thrill Dragster would launch or would power the launch through almost the entire straight track until you pull up into the top hat. King Ka powers it maybe 2/3 to 3/5 of the way to the actual pull up into the top hat, and then the launch just stops. There's no more power. It hit the top speed. It's good to go. So you kind of coast for a second or so, but it feels weird to have that pressure just suddenly release from you, like nothing is going on anymore. So in my opinion, Top Thrill Dragster was more comfortable, more fun, and more exciting to ride.
Yet, there's only one still with us today.
Technically.
Well, as we return to the end of Top Thrill Dragster's life, I can say that as her 20th anniversary slowly began to creep up, it seemed that Top Thrill Dragster was kind of here for the long haul. Never perfect, not always reliable, but still a crowd pleaser, Cedar Point was looking to get the most out of this very large investment on this ride for as long as they possibly could. Maybe not everyone considered her a great ride, but again, people still really enjoyed riding her, and there was a definite small but dedicated legion of coaster fans who really did love the thrills and excitements she managed to squeeze into such a short ride. Plus, she is a rarity of a coaster. A Stratacoaster design that has only seen one other example built, King Ka, before Parks opted for other more popular and maybe more reliable Intamin designs. She wasn't perfect, but she was a rare find in the coaster world, and Cedar Point seemed content on letting her celebrate her 20th anniversary in 2023.
She was very much just an icon. Yeah. There was no other ride, really, that stood out and could be so recognized as Top Thrill Dragster.
At that park, the only other one would be Millennium Force.
Right.
Those are your two icons at that park. And so, why have one icon when you can have two?
Mm-hmm.
Except, well, you know what happened here. Top Thrill Dragster never made it to her 20th anniversary. Over the years, the coaster was not immune to accidents, as just about any roller coaster out there is. Last year, I rode what many consider to be a top-tier wooden roller coaster, only to have to wait to leave the ride when a guest was hurt mid-ride, and the medical staff at the park had to come assist her out of the ride to avoid further injury. Every coaster has accidents. However, on August 14th, 2021, a serious incident happened with Top Thrill Dragster that caused the ride to be forever closed to the public. On that August day, a guest waiting in line to ride Top Thrill Dragster was struck in the head by a small metal piece that was dislodged from a train as it was nearing the end of its run. The guest was taken to a nearby hospital and was found to have suffered serious injuries from the incident. Top Thrill Dragster was immediately closed due to the guest's injury and remained closed for the remainder of the season. It was later determined that the metal piece that struck the park guest was an L-shaped bracket called a flag plate. The flag plate is what signals the train's location to sensors positioned along the track. I would say it's an important piece on the train to continue to provide the safest ride possible to all guests, not really something you want to lose off of a train. As with all amusement park ride incidents, the Department of Agriculture had to investigate the accident to determine what had caused it to take place and what repairs, changes, or updates needed to be made to the ride to allow it to safely reopen again. The Ohio Department of Agriculture finished their investigation in February of 2022, confirming that half of the bolt securing the flag plate had dislodged, causing it to work itself loose over time and strike the nearby guest. The ODA provided Cedar Point with a list of repairs that they needed to perform before Top Thrill Dragster could reopen to guests, but instead, Cedar Point released an update on social media in September of 2022, confirming the permanent closure of the ride. Quote, Top Thrill Dragster, as you know it, is being retired, end quote, the post read in part. And in reality, permanently closing this ride is probably the only option that made sense here for Cedar Point. The ride had already been plagued with years of lengthy downtime and concerns about guest safety, and a serious injury to someone in line for Top Thrill Dragster made international news, and it isn't really something that Cedar Point can quietly clean up and move on from. If they had actually made the required changes that the ODA insisted upon, there's no telling when or if guests would ever feel comfortable enough again to ride Top Thrill Dragster.
They say it's a small piece of metal, but it is not a very small piece of metal. I could not imagine getting hit anywhere in my body with that, because there are pictures of it. If anyone feels like looking up the Department of Agriculture's 600 something page report, it is, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, a small piece of metal for a roller coaster, but it is hefty and it is L-shaped and it looks sharp. So it is not looking good if you get hit with that.
And even all that aside, knowing the speed that it flew off the train right. at, it's going to do damage no matter what it hits, no matter the size of it.
Right.
It's going to do substantial damage.
Yeah, and it is important to note, Cedar Point was found not responsible in any way for the incident. It wasn't due to lack of maintenance, it wasn't due to lack of care, negligence, nothing like that. It was basically found that this was a terrible, horrible accident that nobody could have really ever foreseen or could have prevented at this point in time.
Freak accidents are weird on roller coasters, but they do happen sometimes. The problem with Top Thrill Dragster, though, is that after they announced that it was closing, the park had to then decide what they were going to do with this ride.
And oh boy, what were they going to do with this ride? That was the hot gossip on all of the roller coaster forums and subreddits and posts and everything.
Again, the internet has given us so much to talk about with this ride that for a lot of coasters we cover in these episodes, we don't always get to see. But the question remained, like, what do you do with this? Do you completely demolish the $25 million investment that hasn't even reached its 20-year anniversary? And do you build something new? And if you do build something new, what do you build? Because while Top Thrill Dragster is a big coaster, it's not huge. There's not a ton of land we're playing with here. It's a sizable lot, but it is definitely limiting in what you can put in there if you decide to tear Top Thrill Dragster out.
And Cedar Point was playing coy this whole time as well. They didn't say anything until January 9th of 2023, which was exactly 19 years since the original Top Thrill Dragster announcement. And on that day, all they said was, quote, a new and reimagined ride experience was coming. They had a little flashy sizzle reel that kind of showed off the top hat. And that's it. Nobody knew what was going on. There were rumors flying around that this company was working on it or this company was working on it. They were doing this. They were doing that. No one had any idea what they had planned.
I think they did that for good reason.
Oh, yeah. It generated so much hype.
And I think at the time, fans were, I don't want to say evenly divided, but fans were divided. Like, if you left the decision up to fans, there was a lot of arguments about what you should do with this ride.
Mm.
And the solutions to make it either better or make the plot of land better. This only really helped to maybe get rid of the bad publicity that Top Thrill Dragster had incurred over the few years prior and hopefully spin it to something new. And spin it to something new is exactly what Cedar Fair did.
So on August 1st of 2023, Cedar Point actually announced that Top Thrill Dragster would be reimagined into Top Thrill 2 for the 2024 season. Now, I remember them announcing this, and my very first thought and first post on the void of the internet was, are we really married to this name? Because it's a choice, but I think it will be good in the long run. It can still be abbreviated to TT2. A lot of their signage is already incorporating the TT2 moniker, so we'll probably see that around a lot. It'll be something you hear or read a lot to reference this ride. But the big thing about Top Thrill 2 is it would actually maintain the exact same top hat as Top Thrill Dragster, the same height, and the same top speed. But it would actually feature a new swing launch with an added 420-foot spike behind the current loading station. The ride would also be updated to feature an LSM launch instead of the old hydraulic launch, which would make it A, more reliable, B, much more quieter, and C, a bit weaker, which is why that swing launch is required to get it up to the top speed that it needs to go over that top hat. The new spike, the launch, and the new trains would actually be designed by Zamperla, which was something that was rumored for a very long time, but something that a lot of people did not think would actually be true, just based on Zamperla's history with the rides that they've created. They really haven't created anything large, and definitely not anything this large before in their lifetime as a company. So it was very surprising to hear that Cedar Point had such a good relationship with them that they were willing to, I guess, let them cut their teeth on this crazy of a project. The new experience for Top Thrill 2 will be very similar to the original Top Thrill Dragster experience, but will now feature a slight S-turn to the right out of the station onto the launch track. From there, the trains will launch forward at 74 miles per hour, or 119 kilometers per hour, before making it partway up the top hat and then rolling backwards onto the launch to hit a second reverse launch at 101 miles per hour, or 163 kilometers per hour, that takes them up the rear spike. Now, that rear spike is 420 feet tall, but the train will not hit that height as it goes up. I think Cedar Point mentioned that they expect it to go about 3/4 of the way up most of the time, but when it does hit the top and fall back down towards the launch one final time, the trains will hit their final launch, which will accelerate them to 120 miles per hour or 190 kilometers per hour once more, so they can traverse the entire original top hat just like before.
So as we're recording this, the ride has not officially opened. No one has really been given sneak previews yet of the ride. It's still very much in the
test and adjust phase.
Yes, the test and adjust phase. So again, if you are listening to this episode at a later date, you might be about to laugh with whatever we are about to discuss. But that being said, given the moment of time we're in, what are your overall reactions to the added spike? And do you see it generally improving the ride's reception to new guests this year?
I think this is probably the smartest way Cedar Point could have gone about this to keep more or less the same ride, that same iconic attraction that they've had throughout the years, but give it an entirely new lease on life and one that will, cross our fingers, be much more reliable, especially with the launches. I can't say I couldn't have hoped for a longer or different layout, but I also know that is egregiously expensive and it would not make any kind of financial sense for the park to extend this layout to make it more like Accelerator or really anything else that might be out there. I think fans are excited for it. I think the general public is excited for it to reopen, but I do think the experience will be a lot less intense than before. My only reservation about this, and this is just until I ride it, obviously, is that those launches are going to feel very long and drawn out. Like, yes, you are accelerating 74 miles per hour from a stop, which is nothing to sneeze at, but with the length of track that you have to traverse for that launch, I always joke that it's going to feel like you're just in a minivan accelerating. It's not going to have that same punch. It's not going to have that same sense of speed. But I will like the fact that everybody now is guaranteed to get a rollback. At least one rollback, if not two, if something goes wrong on that third launch. But everybody gets to experience a rollback now, and you have three big kicks of power to actually experience. I think that rear spike is going to be incredible, and in that back row, you're going to get some absolutely spectacular views of the park around you as you float out of your seat and fall back down to earth. And I do think overall it'll be a very good, I don't want to say addition to the park. It'll be a nice way to reimagine this ride, even if it's not the most spectacular thing that they could have done.
It is a solid rebrand. If you are intent on keeping the ride, which it seems Cedar Fair is, I don't think there is a better option out there for rebranding a ride that was so limited in its scope to begin with. As we've said this whole episode, this was a one-trick pony, so you can't really add that many tricks to a one-trick pony without completely tearing it out. I will say the vibe that I got from the first announcement to present day, it really gives off a vibe that Cedar Fair in general was like coupon shopping for the best possible option. And now granted, this was the most expensive ride tied in the history of the park, but I felt like when they decided to fix it, they were like, what is the cheapest option we have to make this a reality and keep what we have?
Now, let's be fair. The cheapest option probably would have been SNS, and there are many reasons why they didn't go with them.
That's fair, but it does, it really gives me like, it really gave me like a coupon clipping vibe. They really, I felt, I don't want to say skimped, but I felt like there was a very strict budget here. And they were doing everything they could to keep within that budget. And I also say this knowing that the last large coaster that has come into Cedar Fair is Steel Vengeance, which is now 6 years old. So it's been a hot minute since Cedar Fair introduced a new ride at what is their crowning jewel of parks. And we can argue, obviously, that COVID-19 put a damper on probably a lot of what they were planning for the park. But the 2010s were great for Cedar Point. They got Steel Vengeance, they got Valraven, they got Gatekeeper all within a decade. And we've now gone 6 years without a major coaster, unless you count Wild Mouse that premiered last year. So it also felt, to me, it felt a little underwhelming because I think in my heart I was expecting more. And then we didn't get it. That's not to say I won't like it, but as of right now, having not ridden it, it felt a little bit like a letdown for what I was hoping they would do. I don't have a solution on what they could have done better. It just felt like a letdown to me.
I think a lot of their plans, like you said, were messed up by the pandemic. But then they were really thrown out the window by the accident on this, because I think as soon as that happened, Cedar Point kind of knew, okay, this is going to be a big problem and we need to figure out how to fix it. I mean, there have been rumors since the pandemic of this big new roller coaster for the 100th anniversary that was supposed to come, or some large new elaborate dark ride that was going to be incredible for the 100th anniversary or something like that. And I think all of that was, if not completely scuppered at the moment, very, very, very delayed so that they could get, I don't want to say their crowning jewel, but their icon back up and running in some capacity, even if it is sort of a new ride.
Yeah, I don't completely blame Cedar Point here, because I do think they had a lot of things working against them time-wise. It's just, in this moment of time, it is a little unusual that they have gone so long without a major coaster coming in. And I guess, looking to the future, it will be interesting to see how long it does take them to announce a new major roller coaster, and what that means for the current rides that are at the park.
Yeah, I think this will attract huge lines this year, as it usually does, and as any new attraction would. But I do think the wait times are going to be especially egregious for the first few years of this ride's lifetime, because while it should be more reliable and be running more often and just with less problems, I don't really think their capacity is going to bump up all that much. They are going to be running fewer trains, but they will have a different load-unload procedure, which may help things. And the trains themselves might be able to dispatch a little bit faster, just depending on the crew that is actually working at any given time. And I'm sure Cedar Point is going to train their crews to really run this like a machine so that they can get as many people through as they can. But I would be shocked if they are able to hit 800 to 1,000 people an hour with any sort of regularity.
I hope nothing for the best for this ride, because in all honesty, we're talking about this ride on this podcast not because it's maybe the most popular of a ride, because at that park, I would argue, it's not the most popular roller coaster that people go to visit. We're talking about this roller coaster because it was so iconic and it was so life-changing in terms of how it changed the coaster world, how it changed engineering, how it changed how we viewed coasters, how it changed what we even thought was possible with roller coaster construction. So for the historical point, I want this ride to last forever. I think it's a solid ride. It remains to be seen how successful the second relaunch of this ride is. But I do hope good things for it, because I think it is iconic and it is part of what Cedar Point is. And I think it's part of the lore and legacy that is the history of this park. Very much like Magnum, very much like Millennium Force. You can love them or hate them, but they're iconic rides at this iconic park. And Top Thrill Dragstar, or Top Thrill 2 now, like, that's part of that iconic lineup there.
I will say that Top Thrill Dragstar, or Top Thrill 2 now, will never be the best ride you've been on.
No.
But it's easy to say it could very well be the most memorable one for you to ride.
I think with the amount of Stratacoasters like this that actually were installed, just two, I think it's very much a novelty ride, which you don't always find at some parks. Like, one of my complaints about certain theme parks is that not a lot of their rides feel fresh or original. You know, you can ride a coaster at one park and fly halfway across the country and ride a very similar coaster at another park, and there's not a lot to really encourage you to keep, you know, bebopping around to all these parks. That's not the case here. You only have one of two options to ride a Stratacoaster, and this is one of them. And I think the novelty is what draws people in, and I think it's what's going to continue to draw people in, and I think it's what makes this ride good. Maybe not great, but how many of us have ridden Top Thrill Dragstar and we still talk about it because it's so unique and it's so memorable? Well, with that, we have reached the end of another episode of Once Upon a Coaster and another discussion on a roller coaster that I think we all love in our own ways, even if it's maybe not our favorite. Thanks again to Matt for joining us on this episode. Top Thrill Dragstar is a ride that both of us are very familiar with over the years, so it was great to talk to you about everything that you think makes the ride great and everything we can look forward to with the new ride opening this year.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I am happy to be here. And you know I'll always talk about these rides whenever you need me. So hope you all enjoyed this. Thanks so much for tuning in. And that's all I got today.
We will be back in 2 weeks with a brand new episode. We are slowly starting to reach the end of season 6, if you can believe it. But we'll be back with a brand new coaster, a lot to talk about, and a lot more fun to be have with these older roller coasters. For now, I'm Lizzie. Thanks again for listening. Stay safe, be well, and I'll talk to you real soon. Bye! Once Upon a Coaster is an independently run and produced podcast show. Today's episode was written and hosted by Lizzie. Additional writing and research by Rachel Macquarie and Matt Day. Accessibility support by Jacqueline Falker. Our Buy Me a Coffee content creator is Kelby Fox. We have IT support from Patrick McCoy. This episode cannot be reproduced or replicated in any form without the express written permission of our podcast. A special thank you to our Buy Me a Coffee supporters and to all coaster lovers everywhere who tune into our show.